You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, welcome back to Shaping Surfing on the Surf Splendor Network. This is David Scales. Today's episode features surfboard shaper Manny Caro. Remember that episode of Wax On I did with Jack Coleman?
Yeah. I've been like up at 5. I've had this weird kind of energy right now. I guess I'm just kind of really excited for summer, and especially when there's waves.
Well, when I was researching that episode, it was taking a ton of time just because Jack has so many short films. So I was just skimming through most of them because I had seen a lot of them previously anyway, but one of them in particular caught me transfixed, and I watched the entire thing twice. It was about 6 minutes long. It's called Proportional Harmonics, and it features surfboard shaper Manny Caro. The main surfer is actually masked in the movie, like wearing a full-on black ninja mask. It looks like it's attached to his wetsuit. Without even eye holes cut out, you must be able to see through it. It's kind of hilarious, but he's going super fast on a right point break, and then he's riding a really little board that has these little finlets in it, so he's getting a lot of drive out of the board and going real fast, but then at the same time, he's doing spins, and he's breaking the fins free. So the shaper, Manny Caro, as Jack's interviewing him, he's shooting target practice with a bow and arrow in his backyard, and he's holding up the arrow and explaining how the little wings on the tail of the arrow have provided inspiration for his surfboard designs. So I'm going to let him explain it to Jack for you to listen.
It's fun. It's just another hobby that's really fun, and it's just a whole nother thing to learn and get good at and practice. But it always comes back. It's like it's a martial art. It's training you to focus and not necessarily achieve perfection, but to try to achieve towards that goal of getting better and better. And so I think like that's the same with shaping. You can never make a perfect surfboard. You can just keep on working and making a better one, hopefully every time. Fin templates for the mini fins, this is where all these ideas are coming from. So we're trying to find with these finlet boards what fin templates, what surface area size is gonna work for different size waves, different speed, how fast you're going. This is where all this stuff is coming from. It's just coming from something that's older than writing.
So by the end of this 6 minute video, I was struck that Manny didn't really ever discuss surfboard design per se. He only referenced it from designs in nature, how water and air move around other objects. Designs in nature that have been honed for thousands and thousands of years.
One of my biggest inspirations has been this book by Georgi Doxy called The Power of Limits. It basically talks about phi, the golden ratio and the golden spiral, and all of those proportional harmonics in nature and art. Like when we see things that are designed well, it's because it's as if nature designed them.
Huh. So I'm like intrigued, golden ratio, phi, proportional harmonics, curious what all of this is. So of course, go to Google, come across Wikipedia. Wikipedia explains it very detailed. It's a lot of words. None of them really made much sense to me. So I always go to step two, YouTube, and I found this math nerd explaining it.
What is the golden ratio? It's the ratio of sides of a special rectangle, a golden rectangle. If you cut off a square, the leftover rectangle has the same proportions as the original rectangle. That is, A plus B over A equals A over B. This ratio is often represented with the Greek letter phi.
Right. So it actually, the golden ratio has a mathematical value, 1.618, and then kind of an infinity number of numbers afterwards, which is essentially to say that it's the length of the top of a square divided by the length of the side. This proportion shows itself all throughout nature, life, and math. It turns out that these patterns are actually all around you, and economists use the understanding of the ratio, these patterns, to predict financial markets. Artists like Salvador Dali and Leonardo da Vinci use this ratio not only to select a canvas size, but also to configure shapes, objects, and proportions within their paintings. The golden ratio is in everything from the way a rose petal blooms to the way a hurricane forms. If you view it, you know, from outer space, from one of those satellite images, you could see the center of it working its way larger. That is the golden ratio. So the inside of a seashell is represented by the golden ratio. While all of these things, the fact that it happens throughout nature, while all of that is very interesting to take note of, you have to ask yourself, why? Why does nature do it this way? Well, here's mathematician Rob Ensman explaining why in a recent TED Talk.
This is a sunflower, and you can see the spirals coming from the center and going clockwise and counterclockwise, and it turns out these are the golden spirals that we're looking for. It doesn't seem very intuitive at first, but the Mayans saw these patterns. They looked at the petals, they saw the petals grow in these spirals, and they were usually a Fibonacci number of spirals. How could this possibly be? Well, here's a thought experiment to try and see how this works. Imagine that you're a sunflower, and you want to pack as many seeds as possible onto your disk, because then you're more likely to pass on your seeds, have lots of children, and Darwin smiles on your existence. So as you're growing out, you have to figure out where you're going to place each of the seeds, right? Well, let's say, as you're growing out, you decide to put one every one-third of the circle, just for whatever reason. And then you'll notice that these just get these straight lines of seeds that all stack on top of each other. This is not good. This is a lot of empty space that you could have had seeds, so you're less likely to live very long as a sunflower that uses one-third. But if instead you use one phi, and you go a phi of the way around the circle every time, they're never going to overlap. And this has to do with the fact that phi is so far from a simple ratio. So what actually happens is you get a Fibonacci number of arms that are all packed together as closely as possible. And this, you can very clearly count them. There's 21 going that direction and then 13 going the other way. And of course, 13 and 21 are both Fibonacci numbers that are right next to each other. I want you to imagine that you're tiling your bathroom floor, but you want to do something really cool. You want to be able to pick it up, turn it 1/5 of the way around, put it back down, and have it look exactly the same. But you can't use this pentagon because, you know, your bathroom floor is a rectangle. And you can't use a bunch of pentagons because it has these holes in the middle of it. So if you turn it, it's not going to fit. In the 1970s, Roger Penrose did something extremely clever. He took this pentagon and a pentagram inside of it, and then he saw if you have the length of the side to be 1, then the diagonal will always be phi. Then he took this triangle, and made this tiling pattern, which is, one, beautiful, and it has that really interesting property where if you turn it and rotate it 1/5 of the way, put it back down, it will fit perfectly on top of itself.
Understanding this math, these ratios, these patterns, allows nature the best chance at perpetuating a species, but it also allows tilers to lay tiles without leaving gaps. Surfboard shaper Manny Caro uses these patterns and this understanding, these ratios, to dictate curves in his rail lines and rocker, contours on the bottom and the deck of his surfboards, the template, the rake, the cant of his fin designs. So I knew of Manny's work prior to seeing him in this Jack Coleman video, mainly just through Instagram. Mandela Custom Shapes is the name of his board brand, and then Swallowtail Society is his Instagram handle. The boards are unique looking, so I wasn't sure how much gimmickry versus functionality, but the thing that I constantly heard from people who rode his boards, was that they excel in less than ideal surf. You know, they excel in marginal waves. So while I'd like to aspire to ride what John John rides, I'm kind of past that point in my life, and I've accepted my role as kind of a lifelong intermediate. And the idea of a surfboard designed for an intermediate surfer and marginal surf hugely appealed to my practical side. So I scheduled some time with Manny to chat about his designs, his theory, his origin story. We actually recorded this conversation in the parking lot behind a shaping bay at Moonlight Glassing in San Diego, California. So you'll hear a few trucks backing up for the first few minutes of the interview. It clears up at some point. Nevertheless, I hope that you enjoy this conversation. I'll be back at the end of this episode to sign us off. And then, of course, to tell you about this fin exploration program that we have with Fanatic. Fanatic.com, promo code podcast. I'll talk about that at the end of the show. But until then, enjoy this conversation with Manny Caro of Mandela Custom Shapes. Thanks.
I think with the golden ratio, like, there might be a lot of really stringent rules that sort of surround it with regard to design, especially like if you're looking at how it relates to like architecture, art, music. There's all these sort of like really hard line like design elements that people really kind of stick to with numbers. Like I've always tried to find sort of this like nice blend of just finding what feels good and looks good. And based off of golden proportions and golden ratios, you know, once if you stick to any, especially with surfboard design, if you stick to any kind of like rigid rules, you can either say that you know where the limits are, and those are the boundaries within your design, or you can, and within those limits, you can play a lot. There's a lot of leeway. You don't have to stick to like specific numbers to say that you're sticking to the golden ratio. I feel like if you're dealing with curves, any component of any portion of any curve is always going to incorporate some element of the golden ratio because it is a curve. So, you know, I can't say that like my boards all have like perfect golden ratios to them. Like you have to sort of use the golden ratio as a baseline for design. And then once you find that baseline, you can deviate away from that baseline plus or minus whatever feels good. And I think like that's the beauty of the golden ratio. Like nature is really flexible. Surfboards should be just as flexible because you're dealing with a dynamic. You're in a dynamic environment. Not every wave is shaped the same. I mean, like, where a lot of the places where I surf, the waves are soft. And so, like, the boards that I'm making are usually made for sort of everyday waves for everyday people. And I think that's just been my prime sort of directive or my motivation is to make boards that are easy to surf and fun. Finding that sort of like happy medium in board design is it just seems a little bit more realistic for me because I have a lot of friends who work and they don't get to surf as often as some people I know who yeah. are kind of, especially people who work in the surf industry. So the time that they have is like, it's really precious. And so when they get out there, they just need a board that has functional volume, and it's easy to paddle, easy to catch waves, and it's easy to surf, and it's fun to surf. Surfing shouldn't be a struggle. I know there's a lot of people out there who their reference is professional surfing, and it's great because, you know, professional surfing really pushes the bar in terms of performance and maneuvers and what can be done. Like progression is always been a good thing, but for most of us, we're kind of on lower, like we're not up in the top of the pyramid. We're kind of in the middle. A lot of us are at the bottom, so we're just out there to like catch waves, go down the line, and have fun with our friends. Mm-hmm. You know, we're dealing with liquid, dynamic medium. Things are moving, things are changing constantly on a wave, and so your board has to sort of adapt in a lot of ways to what's happening. Especially if the waves aren't that good, you're sort mm-hmm. of really have to maximize what's been presented to you. I think, like, if you're lucky, you live in a place where there's really good waves all the time. Like, I know a lot of people who, you know, I lived in a city for a really long time, lived in San Francisco, and like the waves can get good there, but a lot of times it's just sort of, you know, you're just sort of scrapping
right.
for like whatever. I have friends in Tokyo who their idea of a good wave or a good day is like, it's almost laughable for California standards, but I mean, it does get good there in a lot of places. But, you know, and same goes for people in New York. You know, there's a lot of like really mushy, crappy days, and then it's all of a sudden there's a swell and it's like epic.
Right.
But, like, you know, I like making boards for those sort of everyday, daily driver, wave down the beach kind of conditions, you know? And so I feel like, I'm doing my service is there, you know, like I'm offering sort of that service to people when I'm making boards for just regular folks.
Yeah.
I was trying to connect that to proportional harmonics, but I feel like proportional harmonics is just sort of another element of the golden ratio where We need to redirect here. I feel
that's
like
fine.
I've sort of lost the thread.
No, I'll redirect.
Okay.
I guess when I talk to other surfboard shapers, so much of it is either based in strictly what they've learned from shapers along the way, you know, mm-hmm. their mentors, that sort of
sure.
thing. Some people, it's very kind of mathematical. Mm-hmm. And then other people, it's very artistic. Mm-hmm. You're the first person who I've seen when you talk about board design as basing it off of nature and basing it. I'm sure that you have mentors and influences mm-hmm. and all that sort of stuff as well, mm-hmm. but it seems that even those things you're referencing off of what nature has taught us about design. Maybe there's other people who have treated surfboard design that way too. You're the first one who I've encountered.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like shaping is, it's definitely, for me at least, it's this meeting place between the subjective and the objective, you know, and definitely what a lot of the templates that I have were handed down to me from, you know, guys like Mark Andrini and Rich Pavel and Will Jobson and all of, I can't say that I come up with this stuff myself. Like I've been taught all
yeah.
of this stuff, and I've been sort of, I just take whatever I love from like design, whether it's from, you know, some guy that I've like found on Instagram who draws lines in like geometric forms to, you know, like writings of Georgi Doxy where he's talking in, about deep mathematics and like, and how the universe is sort of like just really mapped out for us. With the golden ratio, I think it's really important to recognize all of your influences when you're creating something, because it's really hard to be original, you know.
Yeah.
But I feel like originality can be expressed in all of the influences that you have, whether it's, you know, all of these influences from mathematics and design and
even from like watching movies, you know, like every, like we, as a society now, like I feel like we're really given so much information every day, especially with social media, like TV commercials that used to be 30 seconds long are now 5 seconds long on Instagram, or in, you know, we're flipping. We're just constantly picking and choosing what we choose to digest and make part of like our memory. Surfboard design is trial and error. Surfboard design is working with what has worked for people in the past. You know, I've only been shaping for 15 years, and I feel like everyone I've run across, and every all the shapers I've met and exchanged ideas with, like every little thing sticks, and like we take what we like, you know, and we sort of let go of the rest, you know. And I feel like as far as like design, you know, all of that stuff is expressed in sort of this collective like thought process of all the things that have influenced you. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I feel like especially now, like there's when I was a young shaper, or even just like 10 years ago, 12 years ago, like I was like a sponge soaking up all this stuff. Like I was part of this new school of sort of shapers that were being influenced by all of the information that was being readily accessed in on the internet.
Right.
You know, before the internet, if you wanted to be a shaper and you wanted to learn about this stuff, like you had to have connections, or you had to be really good at holding a board in front of you and looking at it and mimicking it and sort of looking at the nuances of it and making the connection between those design elements and what they do and how they feel, you know. Nowadays you can kind of go and like I've had people like send me emails and say, hey, I want your Aku Shaper program for this board design. I'm like, I read them back. I'm like, I don't do Aku Shaper. What is it? And if I did, why would I send you a file? Yeah. Like, who are you again? Like, what? I don't get it. Yeah, like, can I have your proprietary information, please? You know?
Bizarre.
But I feel like, that sort of sense of, I don't know if it's entitlement or if it's just this expectation, like, that maybe everybody comes up with this stuff on the computer, you know? I don't know.
And on the internet, everything's free, so you probably give it for free.
Right, yeah. So, anyway, I have to like be really polite when I write back. I'm like, sorry, doesn't really work that way, but here's what you can do if you want to like give it a try. Mm-hmm. You know, go grab a blank and copy a board that you like that's right there in front of you, you know.
Yeah.
And just like learning how to play a violin, like, you, how do I play violin? I'm like, get lessons and practice.
Talking about influences, mm-hmm. You mentioned Andrini. I've had him on the show as well.
Oh yeah, Mark's great.
He's fantastic. I've considered having Rich Pavel. I just was really kind of overwhelmed by the prospect and not sure if I was up for the task. How did you meet Rich?
I met Rich through Thomas Campbell.
Okay.
I think in like 98 or 99, possibly 2000. Thomas was getting boards from Rich, and Thomas had a 511 quad fish with double wing and glass on marine ply fins from Geppi, and we were going down, we were surfing trestles one day, and I was pulling out a board out of the van, and he's like, no, don't bring that, try this, and he pulled that fish out. And it kind of blew my mind, because I'd ridden like kneeboard fishes, and they weren't really dedicated to stand-up fishes, and that board kind of changed everything. It was a little big for me at the time, but it was probably one of the fastest boards I'd ridden.
Oh, okay.
And I remember trying to go into a turn, and my legs buckled. I couldn't even like stay on top over the board through a cutback. And that kind of just like that just sort of set up a lot of dominoes in my head of like, okay, this is what I want to figure this out. And I hadn't started shaping yet.
Okay.
And so Thomas introduced me to Toby, to Rich, and I met up with Rich, put in an order, and you know, Rich has always been really hard to get boards from, and if you're lucky, you'll get a board like turned around under 6 months. You know, the board was taking a lot longer than that, so I decided to kind of like try my hand at making my own, and I realized, whoa, this is really scary. Like, this is really hard. This is a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. Like, when I was a kid, it was kind of like when I was a kid, like, thinking about making surfboards was kind of like making airplanes.
Hmm.
You know, like who makes airplanes? That's impossible. That's so hard. How do you even start, you know? And so a buddy of mine, we got blanks together and we decided to shape our own boards, and that sort of like started that this really crappy progression of boards for a while. And then I finally got the board from Rich, and it blew my mind. And like when I went to go pick it up, he's like, hey, you know, Thomas said you've been shaping, like, I have a present for you. And he gave me a template of a 5.5 quad fish, is a continuous curve template. I still have it, I use it all the time. It's one of those curves that it's like a giant French curve.
Hmm.
So you can use it to build almost anything.
Hmm.
So, you know, like coming full circle with that golden ratio, you know, golden ratio is basically a spiral. And so if you were able to like plot out a spiral of varying degrees of size, you could have templates for almost anything you could make as a surf for like, you know, for shaping. So yeah, Toby's an interesting character, I feel like.
What a generous gift.
Yeah, it was kind of out of the blue, and like I was a little worried that there was going to be a catch.
Sure.
You know, but you know, I think he was impressed with the board that I had showed him that I had made.
Oh, okay.
And he saw the potential, and he's like, okay, well, we'll give you like a little redirect here. And like, I was learning a lot. I never really worked for him. We did sort of trades. There was a point where, when Clark closed their doors, after about 2 weeks, I was out of blanks. And nobody had blanks, and everybody wanted to charge like an arm and a leg for what they had, and it was kind of a really hard time. I think with, like, you know, Rich invited me to come down and get some blanks from his little storage unit that he had up his little secret spot in North County, and I traded 10 Clark Foam 6.2Cs for doing him some favors, like, you know, shaping some boards for him, kind of ghost shaping for him. That was short-lived. I really didn't want to work for anybody else, because mm-hmm. I was trying to work really hard to get my own thing off the ground. It was a struggle, you know. Guys like Rich they're really successful in what they do, and I think at the time he was really trying to sort of cultivate a stable of up and coming shapers who were going to work for him, and he was able to do that with some people and really help their careers, like DJ Kane, Ian Zamora. I think Ian did a little work for him, can't remember. Anyway, he sort of, I felt like I was being groomed to become like his ghost shaper, and I didn't really want to go in that direction. I really wanted to kind of work on some stuff that I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, every once in a while he'll pop his head in to the door and scare the crap out of me, and he'll either have like some sort of giant beard that I it'll take me, you know, 10 seconds to recognize who he is.
Yeah.
Or, you know, he'll just be clean-shaven Rich, like, right there, all of a sudden, out of the blue. I think that's sort of been his trademark, is to sort of, like, catch people off guard and, like, kind of keep them on their toes. He, asking him a yes or no question always ends up into an open-ended question or an open-ended answer that takes half an hour, and then at the end of it all, you've already forgotten what you asked him, and you're just sort of putty in his hand. You know, he has that sort of Jedi mind trick ability.
You learn you didn't even care what you originally asked anyways, because the answer he gave you was just more fascinating, you know?
Yeah.
It's
funny. Yeah, I think he's really well read, so he's really able, he's really able to, like, express himself really well, so he tends to use words as they're his toys. Mm-hmm. And with his toys, he can sort of, like, unless you're really strong-willed, you end up kind of being his puppet.
Yeah.
But he's got to, like, Rich, he's a character. There's a lot of people who like him, and there's a lot of people who don't like him, and you know, I'll leave his history and his actions, like, up to him.
I like him. How did that board go, the one that you got? Do you have more than one at this point, or?
I had one. I had that one. That one went insane. I surfed it for about 5 years straight, and then I kind of put it into a bag because it was starting to break down, and I didn't want it to, like, fall apart, because I felt like it was, like, this sort of, like, it was a piece of my history.
Yeah.
I had kind of gleaned as much as I could at that time. Every couple of years I bust it out and it's looking like a whole totally different board all over again. So it's one of those keepers that I'm going to hold on to for a long time.
Interesting. Yeah. You mentioned spending time in San Francisco. What brought you up there?
Well, I was kind of going back and forth between living in Santa Cruz and San Francisco and Oakland.
Okay.
I had a lot of friends who were sort of moving back and forth, and then we all sort of, like, moved and lived together and did fun things together, and so we were kind of like this, we were kind of like a unit. And I was really lucky to be a part of Mollusk when they first opened. I was introduced to John McCambridge through Thomas Campbell again, and he told me, like, hey, you know, like, this is going to be something special. I think you should be a part of this. And San Francisco and Mollusk, it was such sort of like this really amazing incubator for this really creative community of artists and craftsmen and business-minded people who, like, all kind of got together and were, like, holding hands saying, okay, we're going to sort of jump into this and see if it works, you know? For a solid 2 years, every day I came in to Mollusk, it was sort of like I was pinching myself. Like, you know, there's tree houses in a surf shop. There's designs that were so hard to get before, and now they're just sort of on display on a rack. You know, kind of got to get them before they go all, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're really formative in this this resurgence, this sort of design renaissance that happened in the early 2000s when people started... I guess these hard-to-find designs were finally getting easier to find, and so, like, the access to them was it gave people an opportunity to try things they normally never would have tried. And then and I think the best thing that came out of it was a lot of shapers who were so obscure and you know, like Mark Andrini, like, it was hard to get a board from him a long time ago, like, if you didn't know who he was, because he was just doing his thing. He was working at the insurance company and making surfboards in his spare time. His boards, they sort of generated this. I felt like they were really central to, like, Mollusk. You know, everybody had one, and it was almost kind of like being part of like this hush-hush secret club of like, hey, like, let's go ride hulls and have fun again. And when Mark would come around, he was like Santa Claus's and here, you know, and like, oh my gosh, like, let's go sit on his lap and hear some stories, you know. And it's still like that with him. I think like my memories of San Francisco, like he, Mollusk and Mark are definitely like the first things I think of.
Yeah. Well, I romanticize San Francisco as a surf scene in my head. I've never really spent any amount of time there, but I think it was in place prior, but then when I read Finnegan's Barbarian Days, mm-hmm. you know, he travels around the world and like mm-hmm. Tavarua and like all these Portugal, all these interesting places. But for me, the most important or most interesting surf destination in the book was San Francisco and his experiences with Reniker and stuff like that. And I almost had no interest in surfing big days in Ocean Beach that he talked about.
Right.
But there was still a glamour to it.
Yeah.
That reminded me almost of like the North Shore in the 70s or something like that. So I was interested to hear your kind of experience there. And then also, I know you started out by saying the boards that you build are like for everyday surfers and kind of average waves, certainly that we have here in San Diego. Mm-hmm. But were the boards you were building in San Francisco different than the boards that you're now building here?
They changed.
They did.
They okay. did change. Like
for the waves or
yeah,
for just
there,
your design
there were,
interest?
There were a few designs that I discovered that helped me deal with hollower waves there. Like I wasn't out on the big days. You know, Danny Hess and John Kitamura, they were all out. They were like trying to get me to go. And I was like, I probably won't even be able to make it out, guys. And then I'll drown. That'll be a bummer. You know? But you know, in between swells when like, especially in the fall when you get high pressure in the offshores and it might be just head high or a little few feet overhead and it's just so clean that you could backdoor waves and get barreled. A lot of the fish that I was making back then were outrunning barrels.
Okay.
And just going too fast. What I was kind of trying to figure out like what would work, and you know, aside from a shortboard. So I was doing a lot of research and I found like these little 510s that they're like round pins that guys were surfing in backdoor the late 70s, and just little boards, but they were getting, you know, they're getting tube and they were able to like do big turns, and they were riding single fins and the bottoms were flat to V, little concave here and there, but not a whole lot like in terms of like what we have today relative to what we had today. And so I took sort of that fish platform and just I kept as much of the nose outline as I could because I liked that width, and I was making 6.0s, 510 6.0s, wide point forward, rounded pins, pretty much the same, as similar as I could glean from the videos that I was watching, like Spider Willis and I forgot his buddy's name that they made all those Style Masters movies. They got a lot of footage of backdoor on these little boards, and like those round pins were really, really working for me in Ocean Beach, and that those kind of became like my go-to boards for the waves that I could handle.
Yeah.
There, you know. As far as like rocker and concaves, touch more tail rocker, you know, mm-hmm. But not everything still kind of stayed. I stuck with single to spiral V just because that sort of paper airplane Venturi concave just worked for me, and it was it just made a lot of sense. And in those waves, it wasn't too fast, and it had all the control that I wanted. For what I was able to do on a wave.
What brought you down to San Diego?
Moonlight glassing.
Really?
Yeah. I was approached by a guy named Tony Jordan, who had a shop in Puerto Rico called Playero, and he wanted to get some fish from me, but he wanted them glassed at moonlight. And he'd been getting bonzers and boards, all kinds of boards, from Moonlight. And so I was introduced to the guys at Moonlight through him. And at the time, I was living up in San Francisco, and I was driving boards down every month.
To San Diego.
San Diego.
Wow.
I can't remember if I was living in Santa Cruz, because I was shaping in Santa Cruz for a little bit. It might have been Santa Cruz.
But even still, not that big of
a
difference.
Yeah, it was just hard to, like, you know, truck down, like, 20, 30 boards at a time, and maybe not 30. I had a truck, I think maybe 20. And I would drive them down here, pick up my other ones, pay Sally with a check that I hope wouldn't bounce, you know, and get back and try to collect money from surfers, which is the hardest thing to do. I think down here collecting money from surfers is a little bit easier because most people have jobs.
Yeah.
But
we're talking about a 5 or 6 hour drive each
oh
way.
No, I had a truck, and I you know, I'm such a grandpa on the freeway. I just cruised the speed limit, and so it'd take me like 8 hours maybe.
Wow. 8 hours each way once a month.
Yeah.
Crazy.
You know, but what's cool is, like, you know, I would stop with my folks' house. Like, I would come in the middle of the night and sleep at in their driveway and, like, you know, hang out with the folks, raid their fridge, go
do
surfing.
Laundry.
Yeah, do laundry, and then come and visit the guys at Moonlight. That was, like, coming to Moonlight was like coming to, like, it just, like, it was like visiting the North Pole, because, you know, I got all these elves making boards, and all these Peter and Sally are like Mr. and Mrs. Santa Claus, you know. And it was always really fun. And so after a couple years of doing that, I decided one summer to live out of my van and shape down here. There was a old rub out room that I think DJ Kane was maybe shaping out of, and we were kind of sort of trading off time in the room to shape. And those 2 weeks turned into months and months, to where summer had ended and fall was here, and I was still living out of my van in the back parking lot of Moonlight Glassing. And I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. I had a lot of friends up in San Francisco, but I felt like I needed a change. And, you know, warm weather and fun waves everywhere down here just seemed like, it just seemed like the right thing. And the clincher was, I was parked at Beacons, and I remember walking down the street, I think to get a burrito or a cup of coffee or something, and I saw this house like a block away from the beach that had a for rent sign. And I grabbed the sign, I looked at the house, and I looked at how much they wanted for rent, and I picked the sign up and I threw it in the bushes. I was like, no way. And I called the lady. She came over. In 15 minutes, she handed me the keys. I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is, like, normally, like, in San Francisco, you have to have your everything together.
Yeah.
Like, renter's resume, willing to pay above and beyond the asking price. Like, I mean, whatever it takes, you know? And she was like, sure, okay, you're living alone, all right, what do you do? Okay.
Wow.
Like, those credentials in San Francisco, oh, you're a surfboard shaper? Next.
No, yeah, exactly.
Like you, oh, you're poor? No, sorry. You what? You've been living in your van? No.
Right.
I don't think we can trust you. This lady wanted to, like, she wanted to, I think she wanted to move on. And I don't know, maybe she, maybe I looked a little semi-trustworthy. I must have shaved or something. I must. But yeah, since, and then for about a year, that house, thanks to J.P. St. Pierre, became the neighborhood party house. Hmm. And that was pretty nuts. It was kind of like my John Belushi years, maybe.
Okay.
Or my John Belushi months.
Okay.
Until I met Christine, and all that changed.
Okay, good.
Yeah, no more parties.
A good woman will do that to you.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So I'd like to kind of get into board design a little bit.
Sure.
You have a number of interesting designs. I guess Instagram, firstly, I would think has been hugely beneficial to your business because mm-hmm. the boards look interesting. The elements are probably pretty traditional, but the aesthetics stand out. And so there's a number that we could discuss, but I just figure that would take hours and hours. So maybe let's focus on one design. If you have one that you would like to break down,
well,
I'll let you lead.
I think like one design that I feel like maybe it's just the most interesting one for me to talk about like at this very moment is something that like it's just one of my favorite designs, and it's basically a board with tiny fins. I don't know if it was 2014 or 2013, I can't remember, but I remember going out to check the waves, and I saw John Wegener out with Andy Davis on John's bluegill model, which has these little tiny fins about the size of a Bonzer 5 side fin, and they were going so fast, and then when instead of doing turns on the shoulder, they were doing 360s. And then they would hit the section and drift and like fly sideways and like come and do reentry like and pivot off the tail and like pull it. And I was pulling my hair out on the cliff like, what? How is that possible? What are they doing? And so I ran home, and at the time, like, I was experimenting with really deep swallowtails as quads. And I was like running around like, okay, what do I got? I got side bites from a 2+1, and I've got these quads. So I took all the fins out of the quads, I put the side fins in the front boxes of this quad that I had, and I paddled out there and proceeded to lose my board on every wave.
Yep.
And but towards the end, like, Andy's just like, hey man, he's like, you know, when you feel like you're gonna lose it, grab your rail, like grab Indy, or, you know, and like, and you'll have a 3-point hold, and you'll be able to go down the line, you know, be stable. I remember taking off on this wave, and instead of driving off my back foot, I just sort of set my line kind of like I was riding a hull, and the board took off, and I didn't do anything but go straight.
Sure.
But it was the most mind-blowing feeling. Like, I could never catch a wave on an Alaya. I was one of those guys.
Yeah.
Like, just I would just be floating around waiting for whoever borrowed my board to come back with it, you know, half drowning.
I was going to say not really floating.
Yeah. Not
sinking.
Like sinking. And, you know, like I'm not Dave Rostovich, so I just can't do that. But these boards, it got that, I got a similar feeling to what I thought an Alai would feel like, but on a board that I could paddle. And so, you know, after that, I think like the sort of finlet designs, sort of started, I started like kind of taking another look at, rail volume. My rails didn't have to be these sort of, it didn't have to have like this silver dollar radius on the rail anymore. It could be like pinched like a hull. Edge is important. Single concave, you don't need a whole lot of V because you're not really transitioning rail to rail. You're just trying to get water to flow off the tail.
Okay.
And then, but I kept a lot of the other design elements like the deep swallowtails for flex in the tail. One exception being sort of the elliptical, like round nose, round tail doobie disc design. And that one, that board really generated a lot of interest thanks to Jack Coleman. I had no idea it was any of his film projects were really happening. I gave him a board to try, and I think it was maybe 6 months later, he just sent me an email and said, "Hey, click this link. I think you'll be stoked." Like, and I clicked on it, and it was like a movie, like a short clip movie of Ari Brown and his brother in Mexico, like just doing things on the boards I'd never seen before, like switch 360s, drifting, like reverse cutbacks into a 360 in the curl, and then it was like watching skateboarding, you know. We like to think of it as stand-up boogie boarding, so we call them SUBs.
Yeah, that's funny. I haven't heard that, but you're right, that is, it is like stand-up boogie boarding.
Yeah, I mean like bodyboarding, sorry guys.
Yeah,
I meant bodyboarding. I'll probably get slapped in the face with a fin later by somebody in the water, sorry George. Well, yeah, the dark crystal, the sort of elliptical, like wakeboard outlines worked really well for these finlet designs when they were getting under 5'10", 5'6", 5'3". And then the 5'3s were really magical because that's when all of that sort of like the golden ratios really started to crystallize and reveal themselves in those curves. I gave a board to Rangi to bring on a trip to Baja. I think Jack was with Harry, and they all came over in the middle of the night and on their way down, and they grabbed some boards, and they got some really good footage of down in the points. Mm-hmm. I can't name the points, sorry. But those boards really generated a lot of interest because they were easy to paddle. People were super surprised at how easy, they weren't easy to ride, but they weren't as hard as completely finless board.
Right.
So, you know, all these finlet designs, these semi quasi finless designs, are, to me, they're like sort of the gateway drug to finless surfing. Jack Coleman's been really instrumental in getting those designs out to the world, because if we don't surf around here and see like me and Thatcher riding them, and Andy and a bunch of guys down here, it's a novelty. But when people see you riding, and they people know how I surf, they're like, he's not the best surfer in the world, but wait, he's riding that, how is he doing that? Wait, if he's doing it, maybe I could do it.
Yeah.
And so that's always been sort of my my motivation to get these functional boards out there.
Yeah.
I tell people, hey, you know, like, I'm not Joel Tudor, you know, I'm not Dan Malloy, like, I can ride these. Mm-hmm. That means you can ride these, like.
I think it's a great point. And, like, you talked about one of your initial kind of interests in shaping being making it fun again, you know, and just, yeah, like, everyday waves, everyday surfer, and making it fun again. And that's why Coleman is such a good fit for helping you translate that, is that that's the theme of everything, every film that he's ever put out. It wasn't to show who's ripping the hardest or anything like that. It's us having fun.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think that that's a perfect partnership for you and he.
Yeah.
And for those boards specifically.
Just the stuff that he's been doing with Kyle Kennelly up in, I guess Kyle's in Costa Mesa.
Yep.
Just that little video they put out, was it yesterday? Two days ago? This new Mollusk video of Kyle riding a board that Travis Harder made. Travis used to be one of the QC guys here at Moonlight, and now he's working up with Ryan Lovelace up in Santa Barbara.
Trimcraft.
Yeah, it was really cool to see his name at the end of the video as the guy who shaped the board, that mid-length with the little mini fins on it. Yeah, Travis! That was really cool. And the video just makes you want to go and surf.
That's the thing. All of his videos do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's neat because I remember one of the first videos that he put. Well, I guess some of the first videos, like, a lot of people had a hard time digesting them because they were so, aesthetically avant-garde.
Yeah.
You know, like, it wasn't sort of a straight clip surf movie, and it wasn't guys on thrusters, like, doing airs, you know?
Yeah.
It was weird, tall, skinny guys, like, riding...
crouched.
Crouchy fitness, like, and... But it was so refreshing to watch that, especially, like, having sort of cinematic foundation in my mind, like, that Thomas had sort of, like, I mean, it's funny to see a lot of people say, oh, like, they're just copying Thomas. I'm like, well, I mean, he did kind of set the bar.
Yeah.
You know, like, if they're copying, it's because it's rad.
Totally.
And it's a tribute in every way to, like, even attempt to, like, get close to, I don't know, whatever Thomas was thinking when he was putting these things together, you know?
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like your business has grown since you've been in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason that I like interviewing surfboard shapers is just that it's a functional art form that offers so little financial incentive. So I feel like the only reason to really pursue it is because of the passion of the craft. So it's great to have those creative pursuits. However, they can also be stymied by undercapitalization. Like, you want to explore, but without real profit incentive, your, you know, creativity and exploration is somewhat limited. You seem to have kept a really measured and steady growth without ever compromising your original intention. Have you had to make compromises along the way growing your brand?
Well, I think, like, I can't really say I've had to make any compromises because, I mean, I've been really lucky. I'm really grateful for all the interest. I feel like the growth is, since, you know, so with social media, you can kind of get the word out to a lot of people. When I used to look at my sort of website analytics, I saw that, you know, there was a lot of people in Japan who were looking at boards, a lot of visitors from Japan on my website. There were a lot of people from Europe. I think back in the day, and it still applies now, but that your sort of core community that you that you make boards for has always been sort of close to home.
Yeah.
You know? And that certainly applied in San Francisco. Like, I made a lot of boards for people in San Francisco, mostly because I think since it was really hard to, like people, most people just surfed on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And if you lived close to the beach and you had a job where you could surf in the morning or after work, you know, you had time, but you didn't necessarily have the money. I feel like there's a couple of things that I've done to sort of ensure that I was doing the right thing. One of them was doing my best to buy things that were made in America. I was really, really adamant about my fins being made here. I was getting fins in Santa Cruz that were foiled locally. And then once I found out that my fin template was being made in China, I was like, okay, I got to do something else. Like, I just can't be a part of this, because it just, I would rather pay somebody I know than sort of contribute to something I didn't believe in, you know? Down here in Southern California, like, luckily we live in this sort of, like, hotspot nexus of surfboard production where, you know, I can give my fin templates to Jack Jensen, and, you know, 3 days later I'll have a bag in front of my shaping room with nicely foiled fiberglass fins. The FCS boxes were made in Southern California, you know, like, I could name everybody who touched the board. I could just close my eyes and point to a part of it and be like, oh yeah, you know, Gary and Nainoa laminated this, and Andy Hawk coated it, or Dave did the fins. Mm-hmm. You know, so like, it made me feel good about like sticking to that program, where I did see people, there was, especially after Clark, you know, there are a lot of people going around saying like, see guys, you should have just, you should be doing this overseas, you know. And the guys who were doing that were all the big house shapers, you know.
Yeah.
Smaller sort of, it's funny to say boutique shapers because it's got this sort of like weird connotation to it, but like, you know, guys who just sort of did custom orders and like boards for local shops, like, I feel like, we took a big hit, but we, you know, a lot of us stuck to like our beliefs and we stuck together.
Yeah.
And we're still here. And if anything, like, we're offering a better product than we used to.
Yeah.
So it's good.
What does that mean? I do hear a lot of surfboard shapers talk about quality.
Mm-hmm.
What does quality mean in a surfboard?
Well, I mean, here at Christensen Moonlight, one of the biggest things I think is using catalyzed resin instead of UV activated resin. It's stronger. When you get a board, if you order a board with color, or if you just want it to last longer, you get a gloss coat, and it seals the hot coat so that water doesn't seep in through all the microscopic pits in the hot coat over time, you know. I do make a lot of boards that are clear sanded hot coats. A lot of it's because of the price point, especially if you're everyone's sort of competing for rack space in shops, and you know, it's nothing like picking up a board that you, in your mind, you're looking at it and like, oh, it's gonna do this when I catch a wave, it's gonna do this or do that, and you pick it up, and if it's heavy, it's kind of like, oh no. But you know, I always try to tell people like, well, heavy is momentum and heavy is durability, and you know, if it doesn't work out for you, you could sell it for, you know, more than half of what you paid for it, you know, especially if like there's a market for it.
Yeah.
And luckily, trying to keep this sort of balance between having a board that's like disposable and having a board that's sort of like this archival heirloom.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of trying to find that happy medium is what I'm trying to shoot for. And I'm really lucky that the market in Japan sort of drives what we do in California because of the gray market. I've had to raise my prices because of that sort of gray market. Like, there's a lot of guys who'll come from Japan and, you know, they used to be able to just go and visit every shop and buy out racks of boards because it was like less than wholesale for them. You know, they had the import tax, they had to ship them out there, but you could pretty much set up your own surf shop if you wanted, if you had the operating capital to do it. After working with my dealers in Japan, who sort of, you know, clued me in on all of this, we worked out a way to like organize the pricing structure to sort of not eliminate the gray market. You can't ever really eliminate it, but make it a lot harder for those guys to compete with the distributors and the shops that you want to support, you know. I think like the export market's always been an important part of any business.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you have a product that is really desirable in America, there's no reason why it shouldn't be desirable in other places, you know?
Yeah.
It's why a lot of woodworkers want German tools. And it's not because it's just because it's from Germany, it's because it works.
Yep.
It works really well, you know, and it pushes American manufacturing to try to keep up with those standards. And I think it's competition is good.
Sure.
In that respect.
How would you like to see your business grow?
It's hard to say. I mean, like, growing, I've always been on the slow growth model just because any big, in this industry, it's hard to do things that are risky because there isn't a whole lot of money in it. So being very cautious and doing little things, it all adds up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when I, luckily, you know, with Devin of Instagram, social media, where you can like, you can in the morning come up with an idea or the night before come up with an idea, come and shape it, take a picture of it, put it on out there and say like, this is what I'm working on. And cumulatively, if you do that every day, it all adds up to something. And I feel like we're always sort of testing the waters, you know? Like, I wonder if people will like this. I wonder if people will like this. It's all based on feedback, you know? Like, me and my friends, we all love it all because we're all so weird, you know? And we're lucky enough to have waves in front of the house that where we can, like, I mentioned Thatcher earlier. He's, Thatcher Unsworth's my neighbor across the street, and his family grew up in Leucadia. He grew up surfing beacons, and he's one of like my test pilots, and he's also one of like my like design guys where if I come up with a fin template, I go, hey Thatcher, can you foil this out for me? And he's like, sure. And he'll drop it off, and it'll be made out of like aluminum, something deadly, you know? Like okay, I guess I'll try it. I hope I don't cut my femoral artery. But, you know, and we've been really lucky so far. He's got this little project called Yabai Fin Company. And Yabai in Japanese means dangerous nice.
Oh.
And so, yeah, it's like, you know, when his board flips over in the water and, like, people, like, are like, oh, my God, does he have metal fins? Why is he, that's nuts. Why is he doing that? You know? But we have a lot of fun on these little mini fin boards. All the super flexy dongle fins. I don't even know what he wants to call them, but they're mind blowing in that not only do they work, but they're actually really fun to surf.
Okay.
It's not like, oh, I'm barely surfing. Like, no, he's catching waves. He's doing everything he can do on a normal surfboard. And he's trying to make it harder. But he's not trying to make it harder for the sake of, like, the difficulty factor. He's making it harder to make it more interesting. Okay. I think, like, for people who have been surfing all their lives, they can pick up a thruster or a 2+1 or any kind of regular surfboard and surf, but it might be kind of boring.
Yeah.
You know? I think that's why the first sort of renaissance of design that came around with the fish, it came out around at a perfect time where there were just enough people out there who were open-minded enough to try something different. And when they did try it, it was sort of that, it was the catalyst for them to if this works, what about this? What about this? What about this? And there were other guys who were like, you know, there's all kinds of people, you know, some guys don't want to deviate because they've been trying so hard to figure this out.
Yeah.
And they want to stick to it. And that's, in a lot of ways, you can say that's why shortboard surfing has progressed so far. Because the level of refinement with the tri-fin and those outlines and those bottom contours is super, super, super dialed, you know? Coupled with really athletic people, it all adds up to really amazing surfing. But it's out of reach for most of us.
Not relatable.
You know what I mean? It's awesome to watch.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, watching skateboarding. Like, cool. Yeah, like, okay, let's go to a skate shop and get some skateboards. And you go and you're like, now what do we do?
Slam.
Yeah, I'm just going to fall. But we'll get pumped and watch another skate video and then we'll go out and skate, you know? Yeah. But, you know, same thing with surfing. It's just sort of this happy medium of like, let's just go have fun because we don't have anything else better to do right now with our lives because we're so weird. We don't want to go out and make a ton of money.
I'm glad that you brought up fins because it's become this recurring conversation that we have on the show with different shapers and other people too. And I feel overwhelmed by the topic. Like, there's too much to learn. I mean, surfboard design alone is super complicated and there's a million variables.
Sure.
And then fins. It's just like number of fins and then also obviously foil, cant, rake, all of it is very confusing to me. Let's start with, do you have a preferred construction material for fins?
I think like regular old fiberglass has always been sort of my baseline.
Okay.
You know, it's easily accessible. It's a durable fin material, and I feel like for the amount of energy that goes into it, you get a lot out of it.
Okay.
I mean, it's been common knowledge for a very long time that like glass on fiberglass fins were sort of like this standard, you know, like when before fin boxes came out, when you looked at like guys on tour, you know, all had really dialed in fins, fiberglass fins, glass on. You know, templates were different because of the fillets. Almost adds like half an inch to the overall base length of the fin. You know, with the advent of fin boxes, it's freed up a lot of options. I used to really, really try to get people to just get glass on fins just because I was like, hey, this is pretty much the best performance. It was performance first, you know? But, you know, a lot of people were traveling. It was hard to get boards through a factory without getting knocked out by your sander your laminator and all the guys in the production line who were working on your boards, because it's a lot more work. I used to be super against fin boxes, but now, like, when I think about all of the options I've been fortunate to be able to try new different fin templates when I'm working on a design, that being able to put different wings on the airplane really helps the sort of design process move along a little bit faster. You know, before it was like, oh, if it didn't work, you just, you know, took your grinder out and you ground off the bases of your fins, you snapped them off, you ground it flat, and you sort of figured out where you're going to put the next set, you know? And there's a lot of like romance in that sort of, you know, if I didn't have to make money doing this, you know, if like I was someone who's independently wealthy and just could work on design, sure, I would just do it and, like, you know, kind of sort of lay claim to being a purist.
Yeah.
You know? You can be a purist once you get there. And getting there is hard because you're constantly trying to reduce how many variables there are in a board design so that you can pinpoint what is the difference between model A and model B.
Right.
And fin boxes have been really instrumental, helpful in achieving that. And it's also really made me focus on, like, I guess there are a lot of like foils that are just sort of inaccessible to the regular guy, you know, like a lot of the really cool stuff that's coming out from the like fin companies like Futures and FCS, like they're dealing with foils that are like, they're NACA foils, you know, they're really specialized foils. They're not just flat on one side and like foiled on the other, you know, inside foil. Yeah. Leading edge stuff, trailing edge stuff, composite materials, all that stuff is like, it's at their disposal because they have the operating capital to actually do that. The cool thing about going towards a minimalist approach, like starting with fiberglass and then reducing fin surface area to the point where, like, we've just got just enough to give you directional stability, the rest is up to you. Mm-hmm. And then what's really cool about that is letting go of all of the sort of technical stuff. I feel like it gives you a lot more freedom. Mm-hmm. You know, especially with a wave. And, you know, I don't want, like, it's funny because one of my mentors, Kirk Putnam, he asked me, like, hey, are you gonna, you know, because we were talking about board lengths, you know, like, are you gonna surf any differently on a 8-foot board than you would a 7-foot board, you know, so why don't you just ride the 8-foot board, catch more waves, you know.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With all of this stuff, with the finlet stuff, letting go and just letting the wave do whatever it's going to do, especially if, like, you're going Mach 10 and you're going butt first. You don't know what's over your shoulder except for what you can see out of the corner of your eye. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it really fun. I feel like the best sensations come out of unexpected situations, you know, and putting yourself in those unexpected situations, those situations where you are not in control, that's when like time slows down. It's kind of like, I don't get tubed a lot because we live in North County. You know, there are waves that are hollow when we do get waves, but the boys are usually on it. There's not a lot of room, you know. It's kind of like time slows down when you're getting barreled.
Right.
You know, but because it's something that doesn't happen a whole lot. But yeah. when you are drifting, like, on a head-high wave, sideways or backwards, and you're presented with a new situation, we're like, whoa, I'm going, my board's locked in, but I'm going backwards. And I'm on a high line, and I'm grabbing Indy. And I'm just so amazed that I'm still here, you know? That's when, like, the new, like, for me, like, that's what the new stuff is. That's the stuff that I want to get back to.
Yeah.
So all of this stuff about, like, fins and technology, it's like this reductionist thing going back to finless surfing is, like, for me, it's... I'm going to keep trying to do it until my back gives out.
Right.
Or, well, I can't do it. But then, like, you know, I run into guys like Tim Hurley, you know. I think he's in his late 50s, maybe. Riding the smaller finless boards than I am, and he's frothing.
Yeah.
And so, like, maybe we're not really having to, like, shoot for that light at the end of the tunnel all the time. Right. Like, the light is here.
Mm. Fascinating.
Keep going.
Do you ride other shaper surfboards, and how valuable is that to your own shaping experience?
Yeah. it's kind of like eating food, cooking food. Like, if you ate your own food all the time, it'd be kind of boring. You know, like I actually wrote a Greg Little that I've had for a really long time. It's 6'8". And it's a nice reset, especially if you're trying to, like, get another perspective, you know. Between the Little and Andrini's boards, those are probably the only ones that I really ride on a daily basis, unless I switch boards with people. A lot of the boards I've, like, every once in a while I'll switch with, like, somebody riding, like, a Gary Hanel. And I'll be like, whoa, this is amazing. Cool, now I got a great story to tell Gary when I run into him on the cliff, you know? Like, I rode one of your boards, like, it was rad. Like, I did this cutback and, like, came back around and, like, dude, yeah. I carved the lip. Try to make up some names for him. So
right.
I always have to, like, give him some kind of material for him to make fun of me. Before I do, because if I do it myself, it beats him.
Yep.
He can't make fun of me.
Right.
So I have to make fun of myself first.
It's smart strategy.
It's a little easier.
Couple of questions in closing to try to satisfy our surf goals for the end of the day.
Sure.
What surf media do you consume nowadays? Do you subscribe to magazines? Do you watch films? Web edits?
I don't know if I do anymore. But what's the cool thing is like working at the factory, like anything that's happening in the world is being talked about around the factory, so it's kind of like we're pretty much up to date.
Right.
If there's anything like, and you know, like Instagram kind of offers like a broad spectrum of like what's happening now stuff, and that's fun.
Yeah.
It can be like a little tedious. Like, why am I still looking at Instagram? It's 2 a.m. I need to go to sleep.
I know.
Like. Someone's gonna find out that I'm like liking something at 2 a.m. and make fun of me. Like, why are you, go to sleep, dude?
Yeah,
you can surf in the morning. Are you gonna wake up in the morning? What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm gonna wake up and then I'm gonna check Instagram immediately.
Why am I hitting this button? I meant to open mail.
So, among Instagram, what are your favorite accounts to follow? Surf or otherwise. Give me some meme accounts, maybe.
No, I. It's funny. Like my favorite Instagram accounts are like weird animal accounts like I think Chill Wildlife is my favorite because animals are the best. Who wants to watch like videos of guys like getting pitted and big slabs, slabby waves? Like, that's sort of like, yeah, I can always click on that, but when, you know, when are you gonna see a dog like wrestling a cat or something, and like they're playing, or like,
yeah,
you know,
I just saw
the best one this morning. It was a goat jumping off a barrel and doing like a side kick off the thing.
No way.
It was the best.
Yeah, I mean,
that's, it was too impressive.
For some reason, that's just a lot more interesting to me than what's on Instagram. But maybe I'm just taking it for granted because the world is so amazing. Everyone's doing so many amazing things right now that like, and it's all like kind of like on this platform where we all can kind of compare notes. I sometimes just need to watch some animals doing some funny stuff, and it kind of gives me like a little reset.
I agree. What surfers are you most excited to watch nowadays?
I don't know.
Like, let me ask it this
way. There's so many good ones. I just don't ever watch. I don't ever watch anything anymore, so I don't even know who's doing what.
But if you're on Insta and you're scrolling rapidly and you see somebody's name, who is it that'll make you stop to watch the clip?
I've always liked the way Dave Rostovich has surfed.
And we don't get to see enough of him.
Yeah, and it's, he's so, he does so many unexpected things. And it's really refreshing. It's like, it to me, it's at the same time progressive, and then as it, and it's at the same time it's timeless. It makes me any that kind of surfing makes me want to just drop whatever I'm doing and go surf
totally
mush balls in front of my house, you know. He's a super nice guy. That makes it even like cooler, because he's doing it for the love, you know. It's pretty rad.
What does your current quiver look like?
I've been riding some bigger boards lately. Bigger for me.
Okay.
Like a 6'3", kind of fuller nosed round pin. I've been surfing it as a twin plus one.
Okay.
My lead fins off of my quad set with a little trailer that I drew up, kind of looks like a mini Greeno 4A, and that's sort of like my daily driver when we actually get waves, and then my standard like issue like arc swallowtail quad is always part of the quiver. I've been surfing kind of like, we had kind of a weird summer, so I was riding bigger ones like in the 5'9 range instead of a 5'6 or 5'4, and those are all quads. And then as far as like the finlet boards, they've been getting longer instead of shorter. For a while they were going shorter, like I was down to like 5'3, 5'1, but now I'm up to like, with especially with the deep swallowtails, like I've got 5'10 and I've got, I think they sold. I got rid of a lot of boards this summer. Yeah, but the board that I'm waiting for right now is, it's in the factory. It's a 6'9 deep swallowtail with mini fins, boxes, so I can swap out all the little weird templates that I'm working on with Thatcher. And between those three boards, like that kind of satisfies everything. And then when it's like knee high, like it's like there was a dry spell in like September, it was awful, and so I have like a 10-foot glider that sort of I take down to the beach and just catch little waves, and it makes it fun again just to go straight.
A board that you shaped?
Yeah.
If you could get one board from any other shaper on the planet, what would you get, and from whom?
Ooh, that's a good question. Oh my gosh, I don't know if I could even answer that right now. That's like, it's weird because I think the reason why I can't answer that is because I've just had my nose buried in like this little world in my shaping room where I'm like kind of working on stuff. If I could get one, I would love to get a nose rider from Brenny Yater. I rode one once and I felt like I could do anything on it. Like it was the most natural surfboard I ever rode.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like a step deck.
Yeah.
And I felt like I could do anything. Yeah. And it's a board that I can't make. you know. It's okay. It's like I just can't. That thing is, it's so advanced. It's so epic.
I would think that you would be able to get one from Rennie. Like, you could track him down pretty easily.
I don't know.
You don't think
maybe
so?
Maybe Mark could be the threshold there guardian for me or something. Yeah. But yeah, that's been on my list for a really long time. For a long time, I wanted a Diffenderfer. I wanted a big board for bigger waves from Diff, but that time has passed.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's kind of my short list right there.
What's your current relationship like with surfing? How often? All that?
Well, you know, in the summertime, like, it's busy, so I'll shape before I surf so that I can have my dessert after whatever I have to do. But since the time change, it's been nice to be able to, like, surf in the mid-morning and then get to work around 2 and shape till whenever and come home and have dinner.
It's a good schedule.
Yeah, it's pretty mellow. I'm really lucky to have that schedule. But I think I've been working my whole life towards being semi-retired.
Mm-hmm.
My wife hates that word. She's like, no.
Why? She wants you working?
I don't know. She doesn't like the sound of it for some reason. Semi-retirement. But, you know, I figure, like, as long as you're doing what you love to do, like, work isn't so much work.
Yeah.
You know, it's what you do to knock out the rent. And then everything else is cheddar, sort of.
Yeah.
I can say that now because we just have 3 dogs. We don't have kids.
Right.
It's easier.
Yep. Easier to map out a future that way.
Yeah, for sure.
The final question for everybody interviewed is just, what was the last surfboard that you rode?
Well, let's see. This morning, it was a 6'8 Little. Just a round nose, round tail. Fin almost not all the way up.
Okay, so single fin?
Yeah. Super fun to just sort of reset and find trim.
Yeah.
I think that's like, it sets you up for the rest of the day.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks, man.
You're welcome. Thanks
nice
for having
chatting.
Me.
Yeah.
Thank you, Manny Caro, for all the education and, again, so much of your time. We could have been surfing during that time. The waves are pretty good, and we actually didn't make it down to the beach before it got dark, so we kind of blew it with our scheduling. But nevertheless, great to get you on the mics, Manny, have you contribute to this ongoing conversation about surfboard design. And then thank you to listener. If you like this content and you would like to get more of it, we encourage you to support this show. You could do it in 3 ways. The first is just share the show with friends. The more people that we have listening, the more we can attract great guests like Manny Caro. But we can also set up kind of mutually beneficial affiliation deals like we have with Fanatic.com. It is awesome. I've gotten a lot of feedback from people who have signed up since I've been talking about it. But Fanatic.com, it's basically Netflix for fins, when Netflix used to send DVDs to your house. You rent fins. They have every fin from all the big manufacturers, literally every single product that FCS and Future has, they have on their website. You basically pay $10 a month. They ship them to your house. You ship them, you ride them as long as you want, send them back. They send you the next set of fins off your queue. All the postage is paid for in your $10 a month subscription. It's ridiculous. So what you get as a listener of this show is your first month free. So if you sign up, use the promo code podcast, you'll get a month free, and then we will get our affiliation incentive. So thank you for that. Definitely check them out. Definitely support. You could also link through surfsplendorpodcast.com to find them. And you'll also see all the videos that we discuss in this show on surfsplendorpodcast.com. And the third way to support us is also on the website, which is just the donation button. We have a PayPal donation platform set up, so you can just subscribe for $5 a month. That'll go a long way to creating this content. We have so much planned for 2018. And I'm just excited. I'm not going to get into it yet because I don't want to spoil anything. I'd rather generate the work first and then talk about it after, but lots to come. So look forward to that. And then rate and review the show in iTunes or whatever podcast app you listen in. That's really cool. I love seeing those reviews. I need to actually incorporate those into the show and read you some of the stuff that other people are saying because it's pretty funny oftentimes. So, and I believe that's it. I believe I've done my job here today. Check in next week on spitpodcast.com or just open up your app and subscribe to Spit Surf Podcast because I'm going to be having a conversation with Scott Bass next week covering all of surf news. So go over, subscribe to that podcast and check that out. All right. Until then, this is of course David Scales for Shaping Surfing on the Surf Splendor Network, reminding you, get back in the ocean, get a couple of waves and shred on.